you're in the 06010.
Welcome to the Fantasy Focus. You can watch a live stream on ESPN's Twitter, YouTube, Facebook page, and even the ESPN app. We are everywhere. We are global in the Fantasy Focus. And if you're listening to the audio feed, today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. It's Field and Mike hanging out with you today. A little bit of a weird situation developing here in the 06010, Daniel.
Yeah, something weird happened earlier. I actually got a group text with me, you, and Matthew this morning. And then Matthew just never showed up for the show. Can we throw up the group text real quick?
And I'll read it. This comes from Matthew Berry, TMR's personal cell phone. If you want the number, just DM me on Twitter. I'll send it to you, but I'm not going to share it on the show. Quote, "They tried to damage your reputation. You saved theirs by not telling your side of the story." Sent in Comic Sans text, and obviously in extra large because Matthew has, well, poor vision.
Yeah, the font is very big.
Yes,
yeah.
It's very large.
That's how you know it's serious, though. The font.
Right, Comic Sans.
Comic Sans.
Gilbert made their famous. Dan Gilbert, of course, the Cavs owner, who we wish well right now, but he obviously had the infamous letter to LeBron, or to the city of Cleveland, about LeBron James that carried a lot of weight. So, anyway. Matthew's not here, but Mike is here.
Yeah, I last
What's up,
second
Mike?
Got
How
the
are
call.
You?
I got the call last second. I just ran in here, and I'm subbing in. I'm doing my best. I'm going to try to do a Marquez Callaway impression here.
Okay, yeah,
all right, you know what I mean?
Good.
He's generating some hype. You know, is there a connection there? I don't know.
Well done.
See what
yeah,
I did
that,
there?
That was pretty good.
There?
Marquez Callaway. You know, those Tennessee guys have some success. University of Tennessee guys over in New Orleans. So we got a big show today. We're going to do Double Trouble. We're going to keep things rolling with the Cowboys and also the Giants, build off of the news that we got yesterday surrounding Saquon Barkley. And if we have time at the end of the show, we'll dive into some questions. But it's good to have Mike Clay back. Mike is going to be a big part of the show this year. I've been trying to remind myself about this, that not everybody who's listened to the show has been listening for like 10 years. So if you're new to the show this year, welcome. Mike Clay, an integral part of what we do here at ESPN. You probably already know him because Mike produces more content than anybody at ESPN for fantasy. And if you haven't heard him before on the show, get used to him. Mike, an incredibly smart person. Always good to have you with us today.
Thanks, Field.
News, nothing major that we need to dive into. So we're going to head right now over to Double Trouble.
Double Trouble.
Double
Trouble.
Trouble.
Double Trouble.
Double Trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
All right, moving to the NFC East and potentially two loaded fantasy rosters, Mike. One of them, we think we feel really good about them being loaded. The other, potentially, right? And potential is one of those words.
I mean, if you watch last season, it probably doesn't feel that way. When
doesn't feel
Cowboys
that way.
And Giants, a little different today, right?
But if you sort of took every piece apart, you could see a scenario in which they achieve some level of fantasy relevance. But let's begin with the Dallas Cowboys, who, of course, last year were a major disappointment. They went 6-10. Obviously, a lot of that was due to the fact that they got poor quarterback play after Dak Prescott's injury in Week 5. They also got abominable defensive play last year. It was just awful last season. But the quarterback, Dak Prescott, is the man of note, Mike. When he left in Week 5 against the Giants, believe it or not, he was off to an historic pace. I mean, truly red hot. He was absolutely dominating. As of right now, the ankle seems to be no major concern. It looked nasty at the time, but he's had plenty of time to recover. He's a big, tough, resilient guy. We are dealing with something right now, though, that is on the radar. He's got a shoulder issue with his right throwing shoulder. You and I are not Stefania Bell. We don't have a great grip on how much it's going to impact him. But does it concern you at all that Dak is not throwing right now and may not throw much over the next couple of weeks?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. And I say that because I'm someone who's pretty invested in this offense. You know, I've been talking them up all offseason. I've drafted a lot of teams, obviously, and I have a lot of Cowboys on it for a variety of reasons. So I want them to be healthy. I want them to be on the field because that's the key, right? It's not just Dak coming back healthy. It's the targets around him, and it's especially the offensive line because we don't really talk much about that. We talk about how Dak missed all that time last season. The offensive line was missing as well. So you want to hear that these guys are healthy and they're ready to go for Week 1 because, Field, there's so much potential here. I mean, to your point, I mean, think about this. So we're starting to talk about there's a 17th game now, right?
Yeah.
And what that means for the record books, right? Which records are going to be set? And one of them that's come up is 6,000 passing yards. Dak Prescott last season through Week 4 was on pace for 7,000 yards.
No, he wasn't.
Yes,
7,000 passing
over
yards?
Over 7,000 yards. Not kidding.
Oh, my God.
That's the pace he was on.
That's ridiculous.
Now, he wouldn't have got there, but He would have fallen off.
Who's to say?
Would have come, maybe with that defense. But anyway, that just shows you the level he was playing at last season. So it bothers me for sure. I want him to get healthy. I want him to get out there because the potential for this offense is so massive.
So right now, I don't think you or I or many people on this show are drafting in most of our leagues right now. We're going to be drafting much closer to basically the week before Labor Day is when the bulk of my drafts take place, with a couple after Labor Day itself. So we're a few weeks away from really diving into drafts. So we have some time here on Dak Prescott. But if you were drafting right now, I think you have to bake into the potential that Dak's shoulder could be an issue for this season. The problem I'm having right now, Mike, is that I don't know how much of an issue it is. So I don't know if he's my quarterback five right now in my rankings. I can't tell you that I'm moving him down to quarterback 8, 9, or 10. I will just say that if you are concerned, there are enough good quarterback options that you can look elsewhere. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and the board plays out as you have Mahomes and Allen, then you have Kyler Murray, and then it's like a round later becomes Dak and Lamar Jackson. Maybe you were leaning Dak. Maybe now you lean Lamar, or you wait another one more
Wilson
round.
And
one more round is Russ. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's Justin Herbert. I'm missing somebody in there.
Tom Brady. He's only been around
a couple
days.
He's probably another round or two. But anyway, you have some options in that vicinity that are fine. Now, I think Dak has a much higher ceiling. We're talking about a guy who, again, was QB5 when he played last season. And don't forget, the year before he played the full season, he was QB2.
Right.
You know?
Right, yeah.
So it's not like this was kind of out of nowhere that he exploded onto the fantasy scene, right? He's been doing it a long time. He had value with his legs. We're going to talk about his supporting cast. I mean, there really is a lot of upside there. But again, right now, if you're a little nervous, there are guys that have similar upside that are in the same range that you can kind of go that direction.
So what I'm hoping for is that a couple weeks from now, when we are doing draft, maybe even 3 weeks from right now, that this shoulder issue, the concerns have been quelled. And right now, nobody seems to be raising too many concerns about what it will mean for week one. And I'm not trying to tell you that he's going to be fine, but there doesn't seem to be legit concern about Dak being impacted by this going into week one. So along those lines, I'm kind of drafting him as such if I were drafting right now. Mm-hmm. And you just paint, I mean, the guy is an absolute fantasy star. There's really very little downside to Dak Prescott other than injury. And the upside, as you mentioned, is tremendous. Separate and apart from the fact that he's a very talented player as a thrower, great upside as a runner for a while. I think it was 6 touchdowns on the ground for each of his first 3 seasons for Dak Prescott. The supporting cast, I would argue, is the best in the NFL when you factor in wide receivers plus running backs. And while the theme this year in Dallas has been an improved defensive system and better defensive personnel, I am not personally convinced that they have overcome their shortcomings. And next thing you know, they're going to be winning games 20-17. I think they're going to be winning a lot of games 38-35.
I agree 100%. As you know, I do the unit grades on Twitter, and we do content. I'm working on content now, and I kind of, you know, grade every defense, and they're bottom 5 still. Yeah. I mean, they're a little younger. They added some linebackers and safeties. For some reason, they just prioritized those 2 positions. They didn't really address a few other key spots. So I still think it's a work in progress. Now, as is always the case with defenses, if a couple of young guys pan out and they just hit a home run on a draft pick, that can move the needle a little bit. But I do think at the best case scenario, this is kind of a mid-pack defense. It's probably going to struggle.
Yeah, and bodes well for Dak. And I just love Dak. I love him. I think he's a great story. Yeah, I think he's a great steward for the league, for the Cowboys franchise. He got paid as he deserved to get paid this offseason. And in terms of fantasy, he's one of my favorite quarterbacks to leave my draft with. Let's move to Ezekiel Elliott, though, right now, Mike, which I think is one of the more interesting players amongst the running back tiers. I think you can make a case, and we've had this conversation with you, with Matthew, several times over, about there's 6 running backs that I see in that first tier. And I think that Zeke, as crazy as this may sound after how he played last year, like, there's a case, may not be the strongest case, but there's a case for Zeke as the number one running back in fantasy this year. Mm-hmm. There is. And part of that dates back to what we saw last year, and also the 4-year sample size now, right? Mm-hmm. Almost 5 years of Zeke. It's 2016 draft class, I believe, 2016, 17, 18.
Yeah. 5 years.
So this is the 6th season, right?
That's right. 5 year. Yep.
He's been a top 12 running back every year of his career.
Yeah.
5 year. That's pretty good, right? Like, I know last year was disappointing. But what happened last year changed dramatically in week 5 when Dak Prescott got hurt. Do we think that the last 11 weeks of last season, 11 games of last season, muddy the waters too much with that with Zeke? He feels, in some people's eyes, a little bit radioactive. I'm pretty darn confident in Zeke Elliott this year.
I agree with you. I think the largest concern with him right now is we talk a lot about drop-off for running backs and volume and age, right? He's 26, not too worried yet. 27, 20, you get a little nervous about a step back, maybe to the RB2 territory. But this guy's volume, going back to college, is absurd. Ridiculous. And that's what bothers me a little bit. Will he lose a little bit of a step? So that is a slight concern for me, Field. But there's a lot of positives here. Yeah. There's way more positives, in fact. And you can see the splits right there. Obviously, there's a big drop-off. But look what he did early in the season when he had Dak in a healthy offensive line.
Right.
It was tremendous. And think about the volume as well, right? So for the season, now this includes no Dak Prescott. He finished top five in carries and targets at running back.
Right.
Not just carries. It wasn't just rushing volume. Top five in targets as well. Also number one in carries inside the opponent's five-yard line. So even though the offense had dropped off considerably and touchdowns fell from 3.8 to 1.8 per game, huge drop, he was still getting the volume we're used to from Zeke Elliott. So I'm with you. I think he bounces back. He's RB6 on my board. I think he's, you know, maybe he won't get up there and be the number one guy. Maybe he misses a game or two. I still think he's a mid-range RB1 with a little bit more upside.
I don't know that he's ever missed a game due to injury in his career. I think he's only missed games either due to suspension or the Cowboys having something clinched already by week 17, their seeding, and them either not playing him or just playing him lightly. And to that end, Mike, I think the avenue most frequently to number one, to RB1, I think that there are two ways to unlock it. Either completely absurd touchdown equity, which we agree, I think we agreed Zeke has in this offense with his workload, or two, completely absurd passing game usage. Mm-hmm. He's probably not at the Christian McCaffrey level, even Saquon Barkley as a rookie level, Alvin Kamara level, but it's not like he is Nick Chubb or some of the other running backs that are getting drafted in the top 10 that are 12 or 14 backs that are capable pass catchers, but not high volume pass catchers. So I'm here to ease concerns over Zeke. I know some people are just frustrated with how it played out last year. I do want to mention Tony Pollard, though, and we can have a conversation at some point about the value of drafting insurance backs. Is there value, though, for in your opinion, for Tony Pollard in redraft leagues other than as an insurance back?
No standalone value, I don't think. I mean, Zeke would have to just plummet in terms of his play, right? He would have to just really be struggling, and they start to work Pollard in more. And maybe Zeke does play a little bit less than we're used to, and they use Pollard more, but that's not going to be enough for consistent flex value. But to your point on insurance, really quick, there was only one game last year that Zeke missed. I mean, and he had an excuse to miss. With everyone else out, he could have just been like, I'm just going to take it easy for a few weeks. Sure. He did not. He kept fighting through. But he did miss week 15.
Oh, he did with the injury.
Yes, he did.
And that was dumb by me earlier, saying he never misses time with injuries.
They said almost never. Okay. Anyway, well, your point stands. Yeah. He almost never misses games. So he missed the one. That's the only game Pollard has played more than 47% of the snaps in a game. 12 carries, 9 targets, 132 yards, 2 touchdowns. Easily the number one scoring running back that week. So that kind of shows you the value of the running back position in this high volume offense.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So he does have a ton of insurance value. He's going in the 10th round roughly right now. That's fine for me, especially if you have Elliott.
Would you target him if you don't have Ezekiel?
Of course.
Okay. That's just another strategy philosophy thing.
No question. I write an article every year. I rank the running backs. Basically, I eliminate the top 32, top 32 running backs, and then rank the running backs after that. Basically, your insurance rankings at running back. And there's like 5, maybe 6 guys that I really would be fine with on my bench, regardless of if I had the starter, right? I mean, you just have – that could be like getting yourself a James Robinson. I mean, if a player like Zeke goes out early in the season, you hope that doesn't happen. But if he does and you have Pollard sitting on your bench, you just got yourself an RB2, maybe an RB1 the rest of the season. That's a league-winning move. So you always want high-ceiling, high-pedigree guys like that, right. High-ceiling or high-pedigree guys – on your bench.
Yeah, and I think when people ask about sleepers, and by the way, go check out the latest Adam Schefter podcast, which features not only Austin Eckler, who's not a sleeper in any way, shape, or form, but also Matthew Berry, who some do call a sleeper. Maybe he's sleeping right now, Daniel. That could be where
he's probably sleeping right now.
But Adam and Matthew cover some sleepers in fantasy this year. And I think along those lines, Mike, is that we're kind of past the point of real sleepers because fantasy is so, so popular that like I'm shedding light on like the Falcons' third string running back, and someone's like, I drafted him 4 weeks ago, like totally old news, right? But I do think that sometimes these running backs are insurance policies, whether a high pedigree insurance policy, to borrow your words right there, A.J. Dillon, Tony Pollard, Kareem Hunt, I think is a different category. Those type of players, very valuable as sleeper, so to speak.
And keep in mind, this time 1 year ago, we were sitting here doing the pod, and did James Robinson's name ever come up?
Never.
Not at this point.
Never. No.
I mean, and think about that. He was a league-winning player last year, so there's still...
To be fair, this time last year, we were talking about the Dallas Cowboys, I'm assuming, so James Robinson probably wouldn't come up, being that he played for Jacksonville, but maybe that's why you're not usually on the show, Mike Clay. No
I'm
big deal.
I'm already mentally prepping for tomorrow. We're talking about Jacksonville, so whatever. I'm just a day ahead of you. That's all. That's all it is.
Yeah, good. Damn, Mike, you are Johnny.
He's on top of it right now.
Always one step ahead.
Once in a while.
I do want to talk about sleepers in a moment, in a way that does not sound at all like the conventional definition of a sleeper. When we come back and talk about the Cowboys pass catchers, but first, Fantasy Focus Football is brought to you by Gumout. Today, we're talking performance enhancement. Everybody wants it, and some, let's face it, are looking for shortcuts. You can actually get enhanced performance in just 2 minutes twice a year with Gumout. Gumout with Carbon Clear is performance enhancement for your car. Carbon Clear is potent, and it's the most advanced fuel additive on the market. In fact, cars on Gumout get better engine performance, increased fuel efficiency, and lower emissions. It only takes 2 minutes to pour Gumout into a gas tank, so it's quick and easy to use. With all the things you deal with to get your car running smoothly, it's nice to know Gumout takes no time at all. You probably take much more time deciding who to put in your lineup each week, and it's not hard to find. You can get it at mass retailers or your local auto parts store. So what are you waiting for? Get your car running with Gumout now with Carbon Clear. Performance enhancement for your car.
Forge your NFL dynasty in Madden NFL 22 with franchise features that deliver even more control. Manage your coaching staff and upgrade them with new talents. You know what? You know what, Field? Who's the special teams coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles? Do we know?
Michael Clay.
Oh, you know what? I want to play as the Eagles because Michael Clay is the special teams coordinator. I could upgrade that coaching position, but obviously we know Michael Clay is already a fantastic coach, so we don't need to worry about that one. You can devise a new game plan for every opponent with in-depth weekly strategy. Experience the ups and downs of a real NFL season with the enhanced season engine. Madden NFL 22, game day happens here. Pre-order now.
All right, now we get into the Cowboys pass catchers, and we're going to start by having some fun looking at these Dallas receivers. And we've got a blind resume for you, and blind resume is brought to you by Hotwire. Book an expensive hotel for cheap on Hotwire. Download the Hotwire app to book beyond your wildest means. All bookings are final. So we look back at last season, and here are three receivers that played with Dak Prescott last year. Remember, 4+ games. I'll give you the three: wide receiver one, wide receiver two. Points per target, 2.2 for wide receiver one, 2.0 for wide receiver 2, 1.6 for wide receiver 3. Two touchdowns for wide receiver 1, 1 for wide receiver 2, 1 for wide receiver 3. And interestingly enough, target share for wide receiver 1, 16.4%, wide receiver 2, 11%, wide receiver 3, 23.7%.
That's a big one.
That's a big indicator right there. I'm sure you can guess the three wide receivers involved. The question is, can you assign them to which order?
Sure.
Who do you think was wide receiver 1?
I can't see it now. Which target share was that? There it is.
16.4%.
That one's CeeDee Lamb.
Okay. Wide receiver two. 11%.
Two is Michael Gallup. Okay. Three, of course, Amari Cooper.
And we reveal whether he's correct or not. The answer is indeed CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, and Amari Cooper. Well done there by
Michael. I've only been talking about that all offseason, so that was an easy one.
Sure.
That was one of them rare easy ones, but yeah, I mean, we're going to get into these guys now. We'll talk more about that.
Let's do it individually then.
Yeah. Right,
so, because I think we really got to start with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup. Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. So Amari Cooper, as you saw, had a massive target share with Dak Prescott, nearly 24%. You've got him at wide receiver 12. I've got him at wide receiver 15. This is a really, really talented guy, Mike. There's a reason why they paid him $110 million on a 5-year deal, did the Dallas Cowboys. Is he the clear-cut number one for you, or is there a conversation to be had in this offense?
No, and this is my fault. I just recently made a tweak to these. I actually have Lamb 12, Cooper 15.
So okay, I'm glad you did that. That's 100% my fault.
No, don't worry about it. Cooper's a little beat up right now. That was part of it. But also, you know, and again, we'll get into Lamb here shortly, but let's focus on Cooper first. You know, when Prescott played last season, he was wide receiver 5, right? So he was doing a terrific job. Obviously, the targets were there, to your point. But that's notable because he has never finished better than 10th. Never.
Never.
It's kind of hard to believe. He's never finished better than 10th with all the pedigree there and all the hype. has never beaten that. Now, he's had a high floor. He's finished top 21 each of the past three seasons and all but one of his seasons in the league so far. But the problem really has been targets, right? He's had 130 is the max that he has hit. That's not really what you want from your wide receiver one. So to your point, the target share was up a little bit last season. That's good. It's a high volume offense, which helps. So he's perhaps getting there, but I'm at 123 right now with a little bit of injury risk in there. It's a little below that number. But with something to keep in mind, and I didn't mention this earlier, I think we should as we get into the wide receivers here, is the level of volume with this offense, right? Because Mike McCarthy had a year off after the Packers, right? And when he came back, he decided, I want a fast-paced, high-volume offense. So if you look at what they did all season, not just with Dak, they were second in pace of play, second in offensive snaps per game. That's one of the reasons I'm so high on this offense. They're just going to keep moving the ball, and there's going to be more plays, and they're going to get, you know, the NFL averages 64, 65 snaps. They're going to be closer to 70 snaps, and that matters. That's fantasy points. That's catches, that's carries, whatever it is. And I think that's why we're going to feel pretty good about all these guys, to be honest. And that's why you could have three receivers on one team ranked high with a top six running back.
So along all the, I think I agree with that. I agree with everything you say. And by the way, when I said touchdowns in terms of limiting factor for Mark Cooper, he's never had more than eight in a season, which, you know, I don't know if that's a derivative of the relatively small target share for an elite wide receiver, right? Never more than 130. I mean, their wide receivers that are going to push for 175, 180, Tyreek Hill, DeAndre Hopkins.
What's Thomas's catch record?
149 catches. Right?
He's never had more than 130 targets.
Right. So relatively low. But we agree though, like solid wide receiver two, like maybe even a strong wide receiver two is Amari Cooper. And to be honest with you, like depending how my draft shakes out, if he's my top wide receiver on my roster, I'm good with it. I really am.
Yeah,
there's enough depth there, and he's a really, really good player. And assuming that this injury situation, which has limited him a bit during training camp to this point, gets sorted out, all good.
Yeah, generally around round four and 12-team leagues. If he falls a little further to round five, I mean, you're starting to get a pretty nice value there. And again, if you start heavy on running backs and he's your one or two, you're sitting pretty.
So earlier in the show, you mentioned James Robinson and how nobody was talking about James Robinson, at least in the vein of being a top five fantasy running back, right? Some people were definitely aware of him because after Leonard Fournette got cut, we all sort of felt like somebody had to step up. But and I could be wrong here. I don't recall many, if any, people saying, hey, James Robinson's got he's a top five fantasy running back this year. And the reason why I mentioned that, Mike, is that I think people are kind of often, like when they are at this point of the year and consulting yourself or Matthew or Daniel or myself or anybody on the show about sleepers or breakouts, they're looking for the equivalent of James Robinson finishing as a top five back. Those, first of all, there's no guarantee that anybody breaks out and goes from an undrafted free agent this year to finishing as a top five running back or anything reasonably close. And bear with me here. What I think really is where we can make some hay and be really instructive, though, is not being ahead of the curve on James Robinson, but being ahead of the curve on players like CeeDee Lamb, which is where I want to get to. I've been working on this list. I'm sort of workshopping it. I think it's called My Guys List. It's going to be eventually written on ESPN.com.
Hashtag My Guys.
My Guys. I've got four so far. And it's basically just players that I love this year. And I'm not talking about complete unknown. Sometimes, like T. Higgins is one of the names. Brandon Ayuk, Jonnu Smith. Those are three. And who else did I have on there? I had one more that I'm forgetting right now.
Is this going to be like your hate love? Like,
yeah, that'd
be
a name hate for love. It. Like, yeah. Prefer, don't prefer.
Matthew, anyways. Actually, the reason why he's off today is he's doing a My Dudes List.
My Dudes.
For
nice.
Dotcom, so,
love it.
Yeah.
So basically, just players I have a strong affinity for feel very, 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 very strongly about this year.
Like it.
I think if I had to make a player the captain of this list, the headliner of this list, it's CeeDee Lamb.
Yep.
And it's incredibly hard to jam him into your top five wide receivers in terms of your preseason rankings simply because of the sample size and pedigree of the guys that are already there. DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Keenan Allen's, players of that caliber that have been there, done that for so long that it's so, so hard to say right now that CeeDee Lamb will definitely finish ahead of them or be right in that territory. But I'm having a hard time not wanting to jam CeeDee Lamb further up my rankings. I already have a wide receiver 10. I think the moon is in play for CeeDee Lamb this year. Ridiculous talent. Absurd. Just absurd. Complete blasphemy. The NFL let him last until the pick 17 last year. Mm-hmm. The offense, we've already talked about it. Tremendous quarterback, high pace of play. They run a ton of plays. They're going to be bad on defense. They're going to have to throw it. They're going to have games where they're down by 14 at the end of the first quarter. The stars are aligning to me for CeeDee Lamb to be the breakout player of the year in fantasy football, which sounds odd when he was good last year.
Thoughts? I agree. I mean, think about Justin Jefferson and the damage he did last season and right. was, you know, top 10 wide receiver at times, played like a top 5 wide receiver. You know, CeeDee Lamb, when he played with Dak Prescott, was 11th in fantasy points. That was his first 5 games in the NFL. He was outscoring Jefferson for a part of that. You know what I mean? So
sure.
Dak goes out. He fell to 35 the rest of the season. He still ended up over 1,000 yards field with 5 touchdowns on 85 touches. Really good rookie season for CeeDee Lamb. And to your point, you're talking about some of these guys we rank as perennial top 5 fantasy wide receivers, the highest rated Madden receivers, whatever it is, the best receivers in the league. Think about this. Over the past decade, this is the top 10 rookie wide receivers in terms of receiving yardage.
Okay.
Justin Jefferson, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Odell Beckham.
Pretty good.
Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. A.J. Brown. A.J. Green. Amari Cooper. Keenan Allen. Mike Evans. CeeDee Lamb. Julio Jones.
So
that's a murderer's row of right. superstar NFL wide receivers. Lamb is in that conversation.
It suggests that a strong rookie season is a good indicator that things could continue. Whereas, right, whereas we've seen, unfortunately, several times where a great rookie season at running back could evaporate after 1 or 2 or 3 years. So I can't state it clearly enough. I absolutely love CeeDee Lamb this year. He's the captain of my guys list for this season. That's not a hot take. It's not out of left field. I'm just like, if at the end of the year he finishes a top 5 wide receiver, I will have a bruise on my shin from kicking myself so hard for not having the gumption right now to put him there before the season begins.
But, you know, an important aspect too, especially once you get past the first round or so, is not drafting someone at their ceiling, right? And sometimes it almost feels like that with Lamb because he hasn't done it yet and he's that high and up to like round 3 sometimes of drafts. But to your point, you're not. You're
yeah.
not drafting him at your ceiling. He has an elite ceiling. He's not there yet. So I agree with your premise.
So potential value there. So Michael Gallup, I was wondering this, Mike. Michael Gallup is wide receiver 40 for you, 41 for Daniel, 45 for me. Is he the most talented player? That's tough because there are so many good wide receivers. He's one of the most talented players that has a chance to go largely undrafted in 10-team leagues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If Michael Gallup were playing basically anywhere else, how much different are we talking about Michael Gallup's fantasy outlook?
Man, I guess he'd be higher, right? I mean, we've seen it already. A couple of years ago before CeeDee Lamb made a tremendous fantasy season. They're super talented. I like him a lot. So I guess that's fair. But on the other hand, you're talking about one of the best offenses in the league.
Sure,
and
yeah.
we think his volume will be higher than what it was last season with Dak Prescott. And that's kind of the concern. You saw the graphic earlier, what his target share was with Dak the first few weeks of the season, the
11%.
First month of the season.
Yep.
Yeah, that was rough. But, and here's the thing, 5.4 targets per game with Dak, 7.2 without. So you could say that's a Dak issue. I don't think so, because he worked with Dak before. I think it was kind of fluky. And also, I think it was probably an adjustment to get the ball in his hands more often. And we've seen that so far this offseason as they've worked him in the slot more often.
Right.
So
taking over Randall Cobb.
Right. Yeah. There should be confidence that
Cobb 2 years ago.
His volume will be up this season. So I like that. And keep in mind, he was second in pass routes at wide receiver last season in the entire NFL.
Wow.
So he plays a lot of snaps. I mentioned it's a high volume offense. He's going to be on the field a lot. I know the fantasy production wasn't there, but again, they're going to move him around more often. Super talented, high volume offense. There's really a lot to like. So where he's going in drafts, you know, double-digit rounds, I'm in. I mean, I like him a lot. I'm working on my ultimate draft board, which will be out next week. Same kind of thing. Every round, who I'm looking at, and yeah, sneak peek, he'll be on there.
Funny that you mentioned Michael Gallup was second in routes run. I bet Kyle could probably pull this up at some point in the next handful of minutes. Like, I think spacing is really important in offensive game planning, and not that the Cowboys are down on Michael Gallup, but I wonder how much of like his routes run last year was just like we needed somebody to consistently press vertical down the field. I think about like Damir Bird, who played like every single snap last year and caught like 4 passes, right? I mean, more than that, but you know, there's a couple of those players who what their job every play is to distract a safety, to create different levels of the passing game, things like that. Poor Michael Gallup last year, man. Busy for not that much production.
Yeah, I feel like that was always the thing with the Saints offense throughout the Drew Brees era. You always had like Robert Meacham standing out there just running straight up the field every time,
every
never
play.
Targeted him. You see that all the time.
Yeah. I will say this, elite insurance policy, Michael Gallup.
No question.
Elite. I don't know, and I haven't thought about this right now, but the Cowboys are going to play a lot of 3 wide receiver sets. They're also going to run the football a lot with Zeke, but if something happened to Amari Cooper, and he's already dealing with an injury, or CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, I would think, would almost immediately crack top 25 to 30 wide receivers in a weekly rankings.
And if you're into this kind of thing, contract year.
Contract year for Michael Gallup.
I mean, get paid. Wide receiver is important, and I don't know if he'll be on Dallas next year. I think he'll play the market and probably move on, but there's, big year for him.
Last one here. Is there any value on a tight end in Dallas? Dalton Schultz took over last year after Blake Jarwin got injured, or you think it's more of, you know, not bothering in redraft. If things break out early in the season, I'm okay with it, but they're still probably fifth or sixth in the depth chart.
I mean, Schultz was tight end 11 last season, so it's not like you just ignore this whole situation, but I do think they're going to kind of split them, work Blake Jarwin back a little bit. I think the only place I would throw a dart for my bench is two tight end leagues where you're starting two tight ends. In ones where you start one, it's just not worth it. There's just so much talent, so much depth, so many upside breakout guys. It's just, I don't think you have to do it right now. Jarwin's my highest ranked tight end in this offense. He's 25th.
Right. I feel like when I'm looking at my tight ends, I'm trying to find a player that has a chance to finish first, second, or third in targets on his team without major disruption, right? Like if everybody gets hurt, then a guy might finish first or second or third.
So where are we here? One, two, three, fifth? Fifth is best case scenario.
For Blake Jarwin, in my opinion. Yeah. Three wide receivers plus, obviously, Zeke Elliott. So,
and Dalton Schultz played well last season. He was a mid-round pick.
Agreed. All right, we're going to come back and talk about the Giants in just a second. Really interesting Saquon Barkley conversation. Mike has great thoughts on that, as he does on everything. But first, a word from our friends, The Fantasy Show, which I believe stars Daniel Dopp featuring Matthew Berry.
Daniel Dopp, today's show will be
awarded the old medal, Matthew Berry.
Ha! Just like the Olympics, no one's watching this either. Daniel's been researching so much, he hasn't had time to do anything else. Not get a haircut, not shave, not bathe, or change his clothes. He's forsaken the basics of human hygiene now for months.
Matthew, this is what I always look like.
No, I know, and you'd think you'd be better at fantasy by now. Last season, 8 of the top 10 quarterbacks had at least 200 yards rushing. Rodgers and Brady, the only two that did not. 7 of those 8 who had 200 more rushing yards at the quarterback position saw at least 15% of their fantasy points come on the ground. There's so much depth at the quarterback position. Guys like Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger might put up gaudy passing numbers, but your best chance to land a true difference maker at the position is to draft a quarterback who adds value with his legs.
Listen, if you could tell fantasy managers just one thing, what would it be? And stick to that one thing, because you are a terrible guest, and I want this interview to be over as quickly as possible. Proceed.
Well, you know what, straw man? It's the same thing I say every single year. At a fundamental level, fantasy football is entirely about minimizing risk and giving yourself the best odds to win on a weekly basis. That's it. It's literally that simple. Mike, the camera's on. The Mike Clay camera's on. We put it on. Sorry to catch you during your personal time. All right, Daniel. We better get going. We're due at Elon Musk's space house to hang out.
Hey, will Jeff Bezos be there again? I remember you guys really bonded over being completely bald last time.
Balding. There's an ing, because here in the future, I still have a little bit of hair, Daniel.
Yep.
There's an ing on that bald.
Keep telling yourself that, old man.
How frequently do you sleep with like either a heated pad underneath your back or ice from the soreness that you experience carrying Matthew to that show every single
day? Gosh, I got to tell you, I use a weighted blanket. I use a heated blanket. I also do STEM treatment?
Yeah. It's important.
So I've got a lot. But seriously, new episode of The Fantasy Show out today. How to Crush Your Draft is out on ESPN Plus. Make sure you go check it out. We're going to do another show a little bit later this week. Also, if you want to go to rotopass.com, use the promo code 06010. You can sign up for ESPN Plus. Since Matthew's not here, I thought I'd say that.
That was really nice of you. Do you get a free subscription for doing that or not?
I better.
Okay, good. Let's talk about the New York Giants, right? I think we have to start with the potential star of this offense, both in fantasy and also in real life. That, of course, is Saquon Barkley, but we'll get to him. You know what? We'll start with the quarterback. Let's get to the quarterback first. Let's do it chronologically, just as we have it on the note.
Work backwards into forward.
So Daniel Jones, this is a player that, things went off the rails last year. Mike, he led the NFL, I believe, in turnovers last season. That being said, as we've talked about many times on this show, being a great real-life quarterback does not necessarily mean that you are a great fantasy quarterback. Being a great fantasy quarterback does not require great real-life quarterback play. There are ingredients in place for Daniel Jones to be a useful fantasy quarterback. He's an outstanding athlete. He had like an 85-yard, almost touchdown run last year. Remember that? Was it Thursday night football?
Yeah, I think it was Thursday.
Tripped over himself. Yeah. So he's a great runner. Great runner. And he's got outstanding weapons. But the turnovers are just, I mean, they're unacceptable. Can Daniel Jones turn the corner this year and become a good fantasy quarterback?
I think it's possible, but you're right. I mean, there's some major concerns here. You think about last season, and first of all, I mean, if you like a New York team, maybe avert your eyes for a second. Two teams finished dead last in offensive touchdowns last season, Jets and Giants. And that's
really?
Rough. Yes. Can you believe
wow.
that? Jets and Giants dead last in offensive touchdowns. So that's rough, and it's especially rough because it's not like Daniel Jones missed 10 games, right? He appeared in 14 of their 16 regular season games. He had 12 total touchdowns in those 14 games, 10 interceptions, 11 fumbles. And to your point, he's actually led the NFL in fumbles 2 years in a row, 2 years in the league. Unfortunate. So that's the big one. And you pointed that out. He has to get the turnovers under control because it's not just like you lose 2 points for a turnover. You lose an opportunity to rack up yards, run for yards, score touchdowns. That's huge from a fantasy perspective. But he has been seventh in quarterback rushing yards in both of his seasons in the league. That helps a little bit. And the big one, the big difference maker for him, aside of going into year three, which is a big year, is the supporting cast. And we'll get into more of that here shortly. But getting a Kenny Golladay and getting perhaps Kadarius Toney, and even Kyle Rudolph as a target near the goal line. I mean, Evan Ingram's efficiency was not good last season. Getting Saquon Barkley back, he has the targets around him to make the leap. If he doesn't this season, I think they're going to have to move on. Obviously, they're going to have to look elsewhere next offseason. But because of his legs, because of the better supporting cast, because he's very cheap, you get him in the late, the last few picks of your draft, he's worth a dart throw.
I mean, Mike, I think that last year's trade in the draft, or this past offseason's trade in the draft, Chicago moving up to grab Justin Fields, sending a first-round pick next year to the Giants, that could be franchise-altering for both of them. Because if Daniel Jones does struggle, they've got two first-round picks next year, which I know that's a real football, not a fantasy football conversation, but I think we all agree we have him as a low-end QB2. I could see him climbing his way up into like higher-end QB2, but that will come with marked dramatic improvement from a decision-making standpoint, which as of right now, there's not a huge body of work to suggest that we should count on that. It's not like he was playing with total scrubs amongst his wide receivers in the past, right? I mean, he's had good players around him. He just has not yet delivered on the sixth overall pick standing. Now let's get Saquon Barkley, which I think is an interesting conversation, Mike. We actually had you on the show when we were talking about Saquon within the past couple of weeks. You are the highest ranker on Saquon Barkley. You've got him at RB3. Just a news update for those that may have missed it. He's off the PUP list, which, what does that mean for week one? Nothing necessarily. It just means that he is not going to start the season on PUP. And if you start the season on PUP, that means you're out for 6 weeks. So you can at least eliminate missing 6 weeks from Saquon Barkley's potential resume. But there's still no guarantee he's going to be 100% for week one. It seems, and seems is probably a dangerous word sometimes in fantasy, that there's a belief that he could be eased into the season. He still won't commit to week one. The team won't commit to week one. That could be nothing more than coach speak and trying to preserve a competitive advantage, which we can agree whether that's worth it or not. You do projections. Like, you're not telling us like what you think. Like, you're telling us what the numbers, like what are your projections for Saquon Barkley this season? How many games are you forecasting he plays?
Well, first of all, I have no running backs projected above, 17 games? Above 15 games now.
Really?
So there's inherent injury risk with that position.
Interesting.
So that's my starting line. I have him a game below that.
Okay.
Right. So, and that's normal for guys that have missed time or have some question marks. So, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I've been saying the same thing for months now, honestly. And I've totally understood what Stefani was saying, and it makes you a little bit nervous and you worry a little bit about perhaps a slow start for him. But once he gets rolling, and the expectation from the Giants and us and everyone else is that at some point he's going to take over as their clear feature back, right? I mean, if that was not their feeling, they would have addressed the position. They would have got a Javonte Williams or something, right? If they had significant concerns. They brought in Devontae Booker, and they just recently signed Alfred Morris. So I expect that even if he starts slow, they work Booker in, Morrison a little bit for a few weeks, that's okay with me, because once he gets going, and by the way, week one last season, he played 88% of the snaps.
Right.
That is a ridiculous number. I mean, for perspective, the healthy weeks Antonio Gibson played last year, he was at 47%.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
so
remarkable.
And think about how good he did in fantasy, right? So
yeah, sure.
If Barkley plays 65% for a couple weeks and then jumps back up to 75-80%, you're going to be like, man, I'm so glad I took the discount, got him in the late first round. And that's where you can get him now. I just did a draft, an expert's draft, started with Barkley, 10th, Jonathan Taylor coming around in round 2. I'll take the discount on these guys because they are league-winning players, and you're playing to win the league, right?
Yeah, you sure are. You certainly are. But the other part of this, Mike, that I think people are going to push back on is not just the health, but he was not good last year before he got hurt. He was playing a lot, but the efficiency was way down.
Last year?
Last year. Well, I thought he got hurt in week 3, right?
Wasn't it 1?
I thought it was week three.
Maybe it was like the second snap of week 2 or something.
Okay, so yeah, second snap of week 2. Up at that point, he had 19 rushes for 34 yards. So he had a slow start, which, again, I maybe it's too small of a sample size. So then you're basically correcting me before I can even finish asking the question that, like, sample size issue, not concerned about the lack of efficiency.
Yes, I mean, you're going to see stuff like that for every running back at some point in the season. I'm sure you could pull that on Derrick Henry at some point where he, like...
Nah, maybe not Henry.
maybe it's a slight exaggeration. But anyway, something like that, right, where he goes through a 20-carry stretch where it's low-end production. I'm not worried about that at all. What I am worried about, or not worried about, what I'm excited about is rookie season, the number one fantasy running back.
Yeah.
Year 2, he played 12 full games, was RB4. Last season, 15 carries and 9 targets, playing almost 90% of the snaps in his only game. So, he's 24 and one of the best athletes in the NFL, one of the best players in the NFL. So that's what I'm drafting, and I'll take on a little risk. It's worth the risk with a player like that. Let's put it that way.
Kyle notes he had 4 carries in week 2 last year before he got hurt on that catch against the Bears. And you're right, I mean, league winning upside. How many players are we talking about where it's not obvious? Like, it's obvious that Alvin Kamara has league-winning upside if you're drafting him 3rd overall, right? But it feels a little bit less obvious that Saquon Barkley still has that because recency bias does kick in.
I just can't take, like, Nick Chubb over him. I'm sorry. With the upside of Barkley, I can't do it.
No,
just
I
to
feel
be a
you
little,
on that.
He might be a little healthier.
I do think, though, that rankings are being a little bit overlooked right now. I think he's going, and I could be wrong here, but I believe his ADP is lower than, like, where each of us has him ranked overall, right? Like, I think I have him 7th on my board. It might be 1. Right. No, I think I have him 6th. I have him 6th right ahead of Kelsey. So, like, I'm still taking him in, you know, right at the top of the first half or right in the first half or in the back end of the second or the front end of the second half of your first round. So maybe the ADP is reflected that people are more comfortable with a Devontae Adams or a Kelsey or a, you know, Tyreek Hill or a Stephon Diggs before him, which I think we all agree we'd prefer the running back in that scenario. Only because there's a chance that Saquon is limited to begin the season and because we were talking about insurance policies earlier. Is Devontae Booker good enough of a player that you think he should be on the radar for an insurance policy?
I think last year was his best season.
It was. He was good.
In terms of his efficiency, he played better, but he is 29 now. He hasn't played over 30% of the snaps for a team since 2016, right? He just did not pan out based on what he was drafted to be for Denver. So that being said, especially if you have Barkley, if you want to throw that late round dart at him and just keep him on your bench in case Barkley is a setback or they say, okay, he's going to miss a week or two. No problem with that, but that's the extent of it. Don't go any further than one of your last picks.
Kyle also passes along that somehow his ADP is 6th overall. I just feel like in drafts that I've been a part of on the mock side, he's been going a little bit closer to where you got him at pick number 10.
He 100% is, and I think part of that is where we have him in our draft room, right? We kind of have him ranked pretty high, so that'll drive that a little bit, drive decision-making. But you're right, in very competitive or high-stakes leagues, you're seeing him fall to the 1-2 turn.
All right, we're talking about the Giants pass catchers, and there are a lot to get to, both at wide receiver and tight end in just a minute. But first, you want to get in shape, but you're having trouble staying motivated? Make 5-hour energy shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost you need to get fit. We all know you sometimes do not want to go to the gym. So take a 5-hour energy shot to give you the feeling and alertness so you can get to the gym. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. The 5-Hour Energy website has flavors galore, like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach mango, and more. There's a flavor for everybody. Try them all. On the site, you even have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack. You choose the flavors, and it is delivered right to your door. That's my favorite part about all of this. If you go to 5hourenergy.com, and that's the number 5hourenergy.com, and get some 5-Hour Energy, you can do so today using our promo code FFF. To receive 10% off your first order. This offer is only valid until September 30th on one order and cannot be used with other promotions. The code is not good on subscription orders. Go to 5hourenergy.com today. Support our sponsors because they make this show go. We love them.
Do you own or rent your home?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure you do. And I'll bet it can be real hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save today. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right, we're back, and let's talk about the Giants wide receivers, Mike, and sort of a curious offseason in some ways for the Giants because they double-dipped in terms of major wide receiver additions. It started in free agency when it felt like Kenny Galladay's market had dried up. Instead, he got a four-year, $72 million contract. People, of course, remember that he missed much of late last season. He played for 4 weeks from weeks 3 to 7. Those were his four full games in 2020. But he was mostly out last year. I've got him at wide receiver 25. You have him at wide receiver 24. Daniel has him at wide receiver 23, coming off of that hip injury that is not an issue anymore, but he has recently missed time in camp, nursing, I believe, a hamstring injury that's got him out for reportedly 2 to 3 weeks. What do you make of Kenny Galladay as a player?
Great player. I think he's one of the better receivers, certainly top 15 wide receiver in the NFL. So yep. I like the talent a lot. And we've seen that show up in his production, right? You look at his last full season in 2019, top 10 fantasy receiver, led the NFL in touchdown catches
yep.
with 11. So he's shown that. He's been tremendous. I was on him for sure in this year in drafts. I talked about my ultimate draft board. I was writing about him a little bit,
yep.
and then the hamstring happened. Mm-hmm. And that makes me a little nervous. Now, if his ADP starts to fall, I'll jump back in. I'll be interested. I think that he is a little undervalued. In fact, I think as a consensus, we're a little high on him based on where he's been going, right? He's going about a round later than where we like him as a group. So, and by the way, I talked about what he did in 2019. How about what he did last year, the four games he played, right? He was a top 25 receiver all 4 weeks. He was extremely consistent and high, 14.5 plus fantasy points in all four of those games. So he was delivering last season. Now, the problems here are, you know, he's going to a Giants offense that, you know, we talked about earlier, dead last in touchdowns last year. The quarterback, Daniel Jones, I'm told, not as good as Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Depends on your sources.
Yeah, according to my sources. So that's notable. And, you know, those are the things that bother me. But he should have a good target share. And he's 6'4". You know, when you're 6'4", 6'5", you get
Can't
that work near
that.
The goal line. So good things here, bad things. What it comes down to for me is where he falls now with the hamstring injury in drafts. If I can get him at a discount, I will take that chance.
So last year, the Giants did not necessarily throw the ball a ton down the field, but when Daniel Jones did, he was relatively effective on a per-throw basis. Hard for me to say that he is, like, you know, an established great deep thrower.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is a major limitation of his game as well, which is good for Kenny Galladay, who's one of those wideouts that doesn't necessarily generate a ton of separation, but he's so big and physical that you kind of just put it in his area, and he expects to come down with a football like Brandon Marshall during his vintage mm-hmm. days for so many years with a variety of different teams. So I'm with you. Like, I think he's appropriately ranked if you just take a look at the depth and the players that are going around him. Like, it's hard to differentiate some of these wide receivers, Mike, in the first, like, I think somewhere between, like, 15, kind of like actually right after Amari Cooper, all the way until like a little bit after Kenny Galladay. There's all, like all the guys there, like you're talking about Robert Woods and Adam Thielens and T. Higgins and Jamar Chase on the same team and Kenny Galladay and players that are all like really solid. And like you could definitely see a case for them finishing as a top 15 wide receiver, but only 15 players can finish as top 15 wide receivers in a single season.
And you could keep that
Deontay
going.
Johnson. And, yeah, it continues.
You can get down to 35, 36, 37. You're like Debo Samuel. Yeah, he could be 15th.
Yeah, right. Totally. Yeah,
you
right.
You can do that
right.
forever, a wide receiver. It's
Brandon
unbelievable.
Brandon Ayuk, we talked about. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. So beyond Kenny Galladay, there's three wide receivers that I think bear mentioning, two especially. Sterling Shepard, Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney, their first overall pick this year. They traded down, got him 20th out of Florida, just absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. Best operates in the slot. He drew some comparisons, and maybe this is in part because he went to Florida, we're number one at Florida, to Percy Harvin, who went to Florida, we're number one at Florida. But there are some elements of his game that are, he's kind of got that joystick feel to him, right? Sterling Shepard's a slot receiver at his best, in my opinion. And Sterling Shepard's a pretty heavily targeted wideout when he does play. Is this a changed year, though, for Sterling Shepard? Because I've got him at 49. Daniel's got him at 45. And he does not, right now, I don't believe, crack your top 50.
Wow, I'm at 70. So we are not even close here. I didn't realize you guys 70, were that high.
I mean,
you guys are crazy.
He's got some pedigree. I know. Tell me why it's crazy to even have him close to being ranked.
Well, here's the thing. 6-plus targets in 25 of his past 27 games.
That sounds
unbelievable.
Good. Yeah, that sounds good.
That's really good. He's never had his best season finish, a wide receiver, is 30. With all that volume. I mean, your
points per game basis or overall?
Overall, just where
he's obviously had some injuries.
But that's part of it. I mean, he's missed 4-plus games, 3 of the past 4 years. I think he's 29 now. Mm-hmm. You know, he's getting to that point where you're not expecting him to make that big leap forward.
Interesting, yeah.
And his targets, which I just pointed out, 6-plus targets. Like, he's had that floor with targets. It hasn't translated to fantasy success, and now they're going to go down. For a lot of that time, he was their number one receiver, right? For a lot of, after Beckham left, he was basically their one, and it didn't work out in fantasy. So why you bring in Galladay, you have Barkley back, you bring in Tony. I mean, now he's going to jump up and usable and fantasy. Like, I can't even rank him in the 40s. I think that's way too high.
This reminds me of what Matthew discussed in the manifesto, never James White, right? Like a running back that has a reasonable floor and could finish at the end of the season 32 amongst wide receivers, but not going to win your league. Maybe that's kind of what you're suggesting here, is that there are other players being drafted somewhere between wide receiver 45 and 70 that best case scenario might be, I know we keep using this term, top 15 wide receiver, right?
Yeah, no question. I mean, just think about the batch of rookies and second-year receivers. I mean, I would take Jalen Reagor over him and Rondale Moore and Elijah Moore.
How about Devontae Smith before Bacon. We start throwing out Jalen Reagor, Mike? Come
well,
on. I'll
go a little deeper, but certainly Smith. Okay. I mean, no question. I would hope you would take Devontae Smith.
Of course I would, But Jalen Reagor, man, that's like, man, Eagles fans might clap at you, and you're like, you're the mayor of Philadelphia.
I'm in on Smith for sure. But, you know, I guess my point is, even James White, I'm more optimistic than Matthew is. Like, I know he is the never James White. I mean, he had a top 10 season, you know?
Catch
a lot of footballs, but Shepard, I just don't see any ceiling, all due respect to him. And he might come out and see 6 targets in week 1, maybe in week 2 as well. Maybe he gets up to 8 in week 3, but it's just going to start going down as Tony gets worked in. I mean, if Tony just doesn't play this year and it's a John Ross like rookie season, maybe things change for Shepard and he's just a competent PPR flex or something, but I think that is his absolute ceiling.
So after last year's Justin Jefferson breakthrough, people want to make a rookie wide receiver into a thing every year. Who's it going to be? It feels like Kadarius Toney's path there is a little bit less certain than other guys that we've touted already. He's been dealing with a foot injury. He missed some time due to the COVID-19 list. They have a crowded wide receiver room. Is he on the redraft radar at all?
I would not draft him right now in 12-team leagues. I just think you have enough options. You don't need to right now. He's not being drafted. You just don't have to do it. And it's going to be a slow start. However, throughout the season, one of the strategies I always have is as I'm manipulating the end of my bench, that last spot or two, I'm always just picking up high-ceiling guys, rotating them in. Michael Pittman, for example, was a guy I just kept throwing on the end of my bench the end of last year. You can always do that. Just pick up those guys. If they get that boost in playing time, they could go crazy. And Tony feels like one of those guys for this year, right? And actually, this kind of reminds me of Odell Beckham a little bit. Remember, he was hurt at this point in his rookie season.
Yeah, didn't play for the first 4 games.
Right. He was so hyped up in his rookie going into the draft during draft season, much like Tony, right? All these teams were interested in Tony. Everybody wanted him. Jacksonville already had Chenault and Chark and Jones. They were going to go get him. Everybody was on him. And then he gets drafted and it's like, no one likes him anymore. You know, right?
Weird.
Yeah. And he's hurt. So who knows? Cream rises, right? We say this a million times. Cream rises. If this guy is legit, he's going to force his way past Shepard and Slayton and make a big impact right away. So end of your bench player for now.
For the record, I've been friends with you for, I don't know, four years now, maybe 5 years now, right?
Longer than that. Well, whatever.
Yeah. We're colleagues for a couple of years then.
Well, however long you've been here. You say, I've said it a million times, the cream rises. It's like the first time I've literally ever heard you say that sentence in the history of our friendship.
That's a good point. I agree.
I guess we're not as good of friends as
you say that often, just when you're around?
I don't know.
Cream rises, guys.
When we're bowling. Mike and I go bowling. I know you don't come to that very often.
You throw a strike and it's, that's your...
What's our name for our team again?
When we go golfing, Field and I are like way ahead of you. Wow. That's what I say. Because you're back there.
That is messed up. Pins above replacement.
Bombs. Pins above replacement.
For the record.
We'll wrap things up here on the Giants, Mike, with the two tight ends. Evan Ingram is such a complicated player, right? I mean, he has a lot of natural skills. He's in some ways an oversized wide receiver in terms of athleticism, body build. He is a tight end, of course. I've got him at tight end 13. You've got him at tight end 15. Daniel's high is tight end 11. Where do we net on Evan Ingram? Like, I said this about Odell Beckham Jr. I just have a hard time getting any sort of feel on him. That's how I also feel about Evan Ingram.
One of the hardest people to rank, yeah. Amazingly, because the volume was so good. Top six in routes, targets, and catches. Played every game last year. Tight end 15 in fantasy. Yeah. But that doesn't add up. You get that volume at tight end, you should be a top 10 tight end easily. But he was unusable in fantasy for most of last season. Led the position in drops. All the efficiency stats were terrible. And how about this? He had 6 touchdowns as a rookie back in 2017. He has 7 since.
Wow.
Total. So the touchdowns haven't been there. And it's goal line work. He just is not targeted near the goal line. And they brought in Kyle Rudolph. That's a guy that's going to be featured in that area, I think. Plus, not to mention Golladay, who's 6'4". So I think you'll have a lot for Barkley, Rudolph, Golladay. It's going to be hard for Ingram to increase the touchdowns. And that efficiency drop is a killer. So if the volume comes down, the efficiency is maybe a little bit better. It's going to be hard to put up tight end one numbers.
I'm breaking out the crystal ball, not into the season, but into the next offseason. He's scheduled to be a free agent after this year, unless I am gravely mistaken. And if that's the case, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure this is a 2017 draft class, 18, 19, 20, 21. It's 5 years,
yeah,
right?
Got the option, yeah.
Yes. I'm already envisioning this, where he's a free agent, and he signs somewhere that has little to no established tight end depth right now. And I'm just making this up right now, but like, he goes to the Cardinals.
Okay.
And you'd be like, I don't know, it's Evan Ingram. He's super talented. Like, I could see it working out. And he goes to the Bengals, right? Like, who they have some tight end investment, not a ton. I just feel like it's too crowded there. He's been too inconsistent. Even with the significant target share last year, I don't have a great feeling on Evan Ingram. I'm just like, I think better days are ahead, but I have, like, I will not avoid him entirely. But I'm not going out of my way to draft him either.
Yeah, and that happens, by the way. Sometimes it takes tight ends. We know it takes tight ends a while to get going. He was thrown into the fire right away. Remember, they had all them receiver injuries, and he was basically their number one receiver as a rookie at that game in Denver where he pretty much was that year. But think about like a Jared Cook, super talented, high pedigree. And it took a while before he was a top 10 fantasy tight end, and now he's been it for a long time. So perhaps you're onto something there with Ingram.
And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Jared Cook, who, again, go check out the Adam Schefter podcast, both Austin Eckler and Matthew Berry, because Austin Eckler offered this. Schefter asked him if there's a Chargers player, not named Austin Eckler, that we should know about in our fantasy drafts this year. And I think he's excluding the types of players like Keenan Allen and Justin Herbert. He said Jared Cook knows that offense backwards and forwards, and he's a great athlete. That much we've always known about Jared Cook. One last Giants thought, though. Kyle Rudolph, you mentioned him. Any standalone value there?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. If Ingram gets hurt or just gets benched. Yeah. And by the way, really quick nugget on Ingram, there was trade rumors with him too. So even if he wasn't a free agent. But anyway, and if the Giants are struggling, maybe they do move Ingram. Yeah. And Rudolph steps up, and then maybe he's in the tight end two mix. But I don't think he'll see enough volume.
Daniel, what was that question you had over there?
We're going to do some social questions once we wrap up with the Giants. We got about 2.5 minutes left.
Let's crank them out.
Speed round. You good? All right. Chris wants to know, am I crazy to consider Zeke over Alvin Kamara and Derrick Henry with a third pick in a PPR draft?
I'll make it simple. No. We talked about it earlier. You know, I get why I will be drafting Derrick Henry ahead of him and probably Alvin Kamara as well, but not crazy.
Yeah, it's close. Yeah, but it's not crazy at all.
Okay. Star wants to know, where does CeeDee Lamb rank amongst your dynasty wide receivers, Mike Clay?
One for you, probably. But yeah, he's 8th on my board. But man, there's just so much talent up there. You know,
really, dynasty wide receivers, number 8?
Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, and Calvin Ridley.
Right, that's interesting. Yeah, so I would have thought that, I think there's one's probably a little bit more gratuitous, but he's up there for me. Like I think you have to probably put Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs 1-2 in my book. But I think, but by the end of this year, it wouldn't surprise me if we're singing his praises in a comparable way to DK Metcalf and AJ Brown.
No question.
Yeah,
no question. You just don't. Yeah, you don't need to draft them that high to get them. I mean, you have to draft them pretty high in dynasty. But again, you could pretty much shuffle those 8 names I just laid out, and I'd be happy with them. There's so much talent there.
I do believe CeeDee Lamb came into the league. He came in after his junior year, so he's a young second year player too.
He's 22. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're splitting hairs in dynasty sometimes. So that's part of the reason why I'm so enamored.
Okay, this last one we have comes from Joshua, says, I would like to personally thank Mike Clay for getting rid of the goatee and growing a full beard like a normal person.
Full beard? I mean,
It's a tweet that we got from a fan of the show, Michael.
I don't have the full beard like this guy over here.
Mine is patchy.
So
anyway, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Matthew's hair and added it with Mike's beard,
yeah,
you'd have all the ingredients.
You'd like, have ingredients.
Yeah, you'd have the
for something. Have ingredients. You'd have ingredients.
I'm not sure we have the ingredients for, but you'd have ingredients, right? Like,
I guess so. Whatever you say.
When Matthew feels like donating the rest of that hair, he can just, you know, allow you to take over the.
We had two more social questions, but they were about the Eagles and the Jaguars, and we're going to save them for tomorrow because those are the two teams field we're going to talk about in Double Trouble.
About that, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for watching Fantasy Focus Football. We'll be back tomorrow with two more teams for Double Trouble. Great job, Mike. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Peace out.